pull up, get it.
Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
Right here.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat-out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolewhite Podcast.
Welcome into the Dolewhite Podcast. My guest today, very special guest, my most special guest of all. This is the third time you've been on now. My wife, my beautiful, lovely wife, Kenny Raymer. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We wanted to talk about your last year. You took a job this year in the school system, the public school system here. And this isn't going to be a shit on public school thing at all.
No.
I feel like the things that we're going to talk about today are pretty much blanket across the entire system, whether it's charter schools, whether it's public schools, whether it's private schools, whatever. There's a lot of outdated things going on in the school system that I remember you would come home a lot and you would be like, you would say something like, I can't believe that this is a thing. And it would be something like snack time, right? Like kids can't have snacks unless it's snack time. The first thought in my mind would be like, well, if you give one kid a snack, you got to give all the kids a snack. And then you think, well, what's wrong with giving all the kids a snack? Like if the kids are hungry, they should be fed. So little things like that you picked up on the entire year. And I wanted to have you on to kind of talk about that and then talk about what we're doing about it and what other parents potentially could do about it. So I don't know really where to start with a question or anything, but you had a year this year in the school system. And
I did have a year. And, you know, I would say my observations really are about the system in general. And I don't know if outdated is necessarily the word, but it's like not intuitive, if you will.
And I think when people hear some of the things that we're going to talk about today, I think it's hard to think outside of the system until somebody like yourself comes along and points it out and says, no, this is fucked up. Like kids deserve better than this system that they're currently in.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we could just, you want to start just how you got this job and how we ended up where we are, because it was random.
It was very random.
Our daughter Sella was having a problem going into school.
Yes. We were having a big experience with school refusal, which we can talk a little bit about, but it's quite common, especially with neurodivergent children.
Right.
Stella is not neurodivergent. She is on the spectrum. And so it's common to have school refusal. At the time, we didn't know that was what we were experiencing with Stella. We were kind of thinking it was, you know, just attachment, also anxiety, a new experience. I mean, it's like her first time going to a school this size. We had done like a small stint with a micro school.
Right.
And it did not work out. And we had prepped her really well.
We did.
She was going to Montessori in public school here in Nashville. We had done practice drop-offs.
We did.
We talked about the plan every day leading up to it. She was very excited.
We did all the little things.
We did every...
Credit to you for knowing what the little things were, because I had no idea. But
we did all the things that any psychologist would tell you to do with a child who is cautious, who is hesitant, who maybe has attachment or anxiety issues or separation issues, however you want to look at it. But we did all the things.
Yes.
She was hype.
Yes.
She was hype.
She was excited for her first day. And on that first day,
we drove up.
She got out of the car.
And her bestie hopped out the car, did big waves back. It was a half day.
Yes.
And she disappeared into the school. And we thought, wow. Like that went really well. It was amazing. And so all day we were shit shows, like just straight anxious.
Yeah. There was some anxiety there, but it was also like, well, we haven't heard from anybody.
Right. We hadn't heard from anybody.
Come to find out.
So,
later on, we'll find out why, but you know.
We got to pick up and we were at the bottom of the hill for pickup and car line. And the principal was down there. And she even said to us, she was like, I think it was an okay day. I haven't heard anything about it. And I was like, we were so hopeful.
Yeah.
We were like, wow, this is so amazing. And sure enough, we got up there and they kept asking us her name, remember?
Yes.
And so we're telling them, and now like thinking back, it's probably like, she was probably so like worked up and in such a state that
she wasn't answering her name.
She wasn't answering her name for pickup. And so we had had to pull over to the side.
Yeah.
And then as they brought her out, she was like,
she was a wreck.
She was in shambles. She was screaming. She was crying. She could barely like even emit a sound. It was like a silent cry. And she kept muttering over and over, "My teacher told me to be quiet. My teacher told me that I had to stop talking." And she just kept muttering it over and over.
I think did you get out of the car?
I got out of the car.
You got out of the car.
I disobeyed car line rule number one. Right. And I got out of the car. So that just tells you already where this is headed.
So I remember the first thing that I heard her say when she got in the car was, "I had a bad day." Yes. And she was screaming it. She was very hysterical. I had a bad day.
Yes.
And then when we started, got her a little bit calm enough to answer questions.
Yes.
She told her that a teacher had told her
that she needed to be quiet. And
yes.
And so in my first thinking, we got her calm and I was thinking, well, yeah, you know, it does have to be quiet mm-hmm. in classrooms, and teachers always can make sure we quiet down. And so my instinct is like,
This is normal.
Right. And I'm telling her, you know, teachers need it to be quiet in the classroom right. so that everybody can hear them talking. There's so many kids and there's only one teacher. And, you know, going through that whole spiel with her. Right. And also like, I'm like, this is a learning experience. You know, she's never had like this type of structure.
Right.
And she's a very sensitive kid. So if like a teacher is like, "Hey, Stella, please quiet down," that very well could like hurt her feelings.
True.
And also Montessori is a quiet environment. So I'm sure they're like teaching that from day one.
So, Stella's a social kid too. Woo. Like, she likes to talk.
She is there.
She likes to talk.
She is there for the party.
She's
right?
there for the party
She's
every time.
Socializer.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm going through the spiel with her and she was adamant. She was like, "No, no, no."
She was so mad.
She was pissed.
Yes.
And she was like, "No, I was crying. And my teacher told me to be quiet."
Mm.
And I was like, "Wait, what?" So I'm having her walk me through the story. I'm like, "So you're crying and then someone told you to be quiet because you were crying?" And she was like, "Yes." And she said that her best friend tried to hold her hand while she was crying. And then the teacher told them that they could not hold hands.
Mm.
And then the teacher told them they couldn't sit by each other or stand next to each other in line. And then she just continued to tell us throughout her day, like how she cried the whole day.
Yeah.
And I said, "Well, what would happen when you cried?" And then she said, "Well, one teacher said, 'Oh, are you still crying?'"
Yeah.
And I was like,
"Yeah, that was it for you."
That was it for me. I was like, "Okay, so there's some bullies up in this bitch."
Yeah.
Because who
talks shit to a kid?
Who talks shit to a kid? Who sees a kid in distress and instead of
helping,
supporting them, pours gasoline on the crying fire?
Yes.
"Oh, you still crying?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Okay, I'm going up there."
Yeah. And so the next morning, credit to the principal. The next morning we had a meeting.
Yes. I sent an email to the teacher and she forwarded it to the principal and the vice principal. And they were like, "Please come the next morning." And we were fully prepared to like pull her. We were like, This is not going to work.
I walked in there completely thinking we were walking out of there looking for a new school that day.
Because to make a longer story short, it wasn't just that one incident. Stella walked us through the whole day and there were lots of incidents. Which she was not supported. She was not cared for.
Right.
She was bullied.
Yes.
The situation was instigated rather than mitigated.
A lot of red flags.
So many red flags.
So we get into this meeting and it's actually going way better than I ever thought it could.
Yeah, it went really well.
And in that meeting though, the principal then asked you, are you an academic or something like that? And you're like, "Yes, I love school, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, "All right, she's being modest." I was like, "My wife has a master's degree from the University of Chicago."
And you're like the only person. You tell everybody this. I tell no one this, but you tell anyone who will listen.
You're going to ask. If you're going to ask that question, "Are you an academic?" And you're just like, "Yeah, blah, blah, blah. I'm an academic." I'm like, no. She is a real academic. Like, she does this.
I am a real academic.
She does this.
I do, and so you gotta
let motherfuckers know. You know what I'm saying? So I had to let them know. And probably what, 3 minutes later, I think she said she was talking about something. And then she comes back in and she was like, "Cause I'm going to offer you a job." And I was like, "What the fuck just happened here?"
Because I was like, I was very upset. And I was like, in this situation, I was like, she described the day to me and at no point did she describe anyone getting down to her level, anyone offering to hold her mm-hmm. hand, anyone offering to breathe with her, anyone offering to move her out of the classroom or move her body, anyone asking her how she felt or what the feelings she had, basically offering to co-regulate for her. Right. And so then I brought to help her.
Yes.
Right. And so then I brought up the situation also of the bully and who asked her, was she still crying? And And we talked about how teachers are humans and they have bad days. And I was like, whoa, I get it, because I'm a parent and I have bad days, right? And I'm like, so where is the repair? Because after bad days, after bad moments, we have repair in our homes. Yes. If I get upset and frustrated and I yell or I take a tone that she does not like, we do get frustrated. Yeah. Obviously, we're human. Doing this 24/7 and we're human. And so I'm not expecting people to not be frustrated with kids, but where's the repair? And so I'm asking these things and I'm putting the pressure on. Mm-hmm. I'm like, where are these things happening in your building, in your classrooms with your adults? And she was like, would you like a job here? Doing these things, serving this role for these students and the adults in the building. And then you were taken.
I'm blown away that
by
this
my
is,
response.
Yeah, because I was like, yes, they're going to be disappointed here because there's no way you wanted a job. There's no way you wanted a job. You love what you were doing beforehand.
Yes.
There's no way you're taking a full-time job. And you said you would be interested. And
think about it.
Yeah, I was sitting here like, what the fuck is happening here? What happened? So long story short, she accepted the position.
The position it's called an advocacy coach. Yes. In all schools within MNPS, the Metro Nashville Public School System, with the exception, I believe, of two schools who have a partnership for a regulating position. So all schools within the district have this role, and it's called an advocacy coach. And the name is a bit confusing, but if you think about it, it's someone who coaches kids to advocate for themselves in moments of distress.
Yes.
And so what I think of it in my head is a regulation coach.
Yes.
I was there to help people in the building. Now, the role is geared towards the students, but I went in there with, if we can regulate the adults, we have a better shot at keeping the kids regulated longer.
Yes. And I want to back up for 1 second, because there was a 2 month gap between that conversation and you starting actually your first day.
Yes. There's lots of thinking about it time.
Yes. But in that time, though, Sela, shout out to the vice principal at the school who took Sela under her wing.
We love you, Dr. Jones.
Yes, we love you a lot, because Dr. Jones took Sela in under her wing.
She did.
And became her safe person.
She did. It was a month-long school refusal that we endured. And then
Dr. Jones got us through that, and Sela would follow Dr. Jones. She wouldn't go into class. She was just with Dr. Jones pretty much all day. And slowly, Dr. Jones started introducing her to
people in the school. Yes. Mr. Hector, her name's necessary. But to different people in the school who would move on to support her.
Right. And so the whole time, Kenny and I are sitting here like, we just got to get her until your start date. But by your start date, she was rocking it. She was going in every day. Shout out to Miss Kristen.
Shout out to Miss Kristen. We love you, Kristen. Shout out to Miss Kristen and Dr. Jones, because she started flourishing the first week of September. Yeah. And so then it was kind of even like less of an incentive to work there, because she was flourishing.
Yes. But you had already said yes. So you went through
it. Already say yes. And it wasn't just for her. The position wasn't for her. I really was like, I had been doing this work, this regulation work, for the previous year with adults. I had been teaching 333, which is how to heal the physical and energetic body. And I would say every class, this is what we need to be teaching in schools. This is what kids need to be learning in schools. And this is why you need to be careful with what you say, because the universe was like, that, sis. So I was like, yes, because I really feel strongly about kids learning tools to regulate themselves. Like, I don't know if enough people know that regulation is not something that we are born with, the ability to regulate oneself. It is a skill that we learn. And it's actually a skill that can only be learned through a process of co-regulation, in which another person who is regulated is there with you, modeling and holding space for your process of regulation. And it literally does not click until around the age of 25, when changes happen in the brain. Wow. And so there are thousands of impressions literally needed for a human to learn how to regulate through the process of co-regulation. And we can see how generations before us have not valued co-regulation because we have a sea of adults who don't know how to regulate. And you can think of it in terms like this. If you have a situation, say you're at work and your coworker really pisses you off and you are like, I cannot believe this is even happening to me. Your boss has done something outrageous, just like the audacity. And instead of going for a walk, doing breath work, moving your body, drinking something slowly, doing these different types of nervous system tapping, there's all kinds of things that we can do to regulate the body. If your go-to is to go to another human being, whether you call them on the phone or you go to their desk, you close the door and you're like, you are not going to believe what they did today. Or you call up your mama or you call up your bestie and you walk them through the audacity that you just experienced. You yourself just sought out a co-regulation space. You yourself are unable to regulate. Yet we expect kids to be in situations of distress and calm themselves down alone when adults cannot even do it. So you can see I'm trying to control myself because I get very passionate about this.
Yes.
It makes me very, very upset to see adults putting this pressure and the onus to regulate themselves on kids when it is our work as adults in the community, in the family, in the school to lead this process, to guide, to model, to hold space for regulation to happen. And let me tell you, it is not happening in your schools. And I do not care if it is a public school, if it is a private school. I'm sure it's happening with some teachers who are just gems. And I'm not shitting on teachers and I'm not shitting on public schools. We wanted Sella to be in the public school system. But I am saying the system is not built for it.
It is not.
Teachers are in classrooms with too many kids.
True.
They have curriculum forced down their throat in which they do not have space to breathe, to be creative, to do the things that brought them into the profession at all. They themselves are not regulated because we are in a teacher crisis in most spaces. They themselves are not regulated because our government does not care about their safety. And so in the back of every person's mind who is aware of the gravity of a situation of being in a school is this a safe space? Meaning, is someone going to come in here and try to kill us? And then if that happens, what do I do next?
And it literally happened in Nashville.
It literally happened
in
Nashville during the school year.
Yeah.
And so my point is, I'm not shitting on teachers and saying teachers aren't holding space for co-regulation. I'm saying the system is not built to support teachers, to support students in the way that all parties need to be supported for everyone to be successful. And so part of my work in the school was getting teachers to buy into my role, which is another thing that can be talked about. But me saying, hey, I'm not trying to take over your class and I'm not trying to say that you're not doing something right. I'm saying you have your hands full. You have so much going on. So when you're walking down the hall and a kid is melting down, let me support you. Let me support you in supporting that child.
Right.
So you can move on and do the things that need to be done between 8 and it's not even 3 because pickup is starting at 2:15. Right. So between 8 and 2, and there's all these things that teachers and staff have to get done in this very short amount of time. And it's just, it's a pressure cooker.
Yeah. Everybody's is like running on empty.
Everyone is surviving.
Everybody is in survival mode the entire time.
Everybody's in survival mode. And when you're in survival mode, you cannot hold space to regulate someone else. If you yourself are not regulated, you cannot hold space to regulate for someone else. Their entire experience is going to be triggering for you and you're going to be reacting and or shutting down, which means like leaving your consciousness, leaving your body to survive that moment.
Yeah.
You know, it's an unfortunate situation. And I will say, despite it being an unfortunate situation, I do believe the system is working as designed.
I agree with that. I agree.
The system is not designed to see us flourish. The public education system, that is, it's not designed to see us flourish.
It's not, especially in areas where you were in North Nashville.
Yes, North Nashville.
And not only is it not designed for it, and like you said, it's designed against it.
Yeah.
Every kid is different and they have to fit. It's putting, what is it? The square into the circle, the square peg into a circle.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
And that's what the system
is.
The
concept of compliance over connection. Yeah,
exactly.
And because there's so many students in such a small space. And so this is in most schools, you know, students need to be compliant. I mean, when I first started working there, I heard that word so many times. I was like, what in what is going on? Like, what are we talking about? Compliance, like, and you'll hear it over and over being used with staff need to be compliant, students compliant or non-compliant. It's definitely a compliance over connection based model.
Yes. And students go there and their needs aren't getting met.
They're not.
And then we expect them to learn and retain information in a space where their needs aren't being met. And I remember, I keep bringing up the snack thing because it was such kind of a moment for me when it clicked. And I'm like, if I'm sitting at my desk at work and I'm starving, I'm not getting shit done. And if I am, I'm not doing it as well as I need to. And I'm, as an adult, I'm not going to sit there and be hungry for too long. I'm going to get up and get myself some food.
The food situation in schools is frustrating. Like,
why don't we extend that same courtesy to kids? They can't function and learn and sit there and do their work and retain information on an empty stomach, just like I can't work or do almost anything on an empty stomach. So like, it's almost discriminatory. There are discriminatory practices against kids in schools. And I remember growing up, my parents would always tell me, like, well, we were kids. Our parents kids are to be seen and not heard. That shit is still here.
It is most definitely still here. This is a beautiful example of how slow evolution is taking place within the school system. So you remember when we were in school and it's like, if you had to go to the bathroom, It was not as easy as just getting up and going to the bathroom. I mean, you can't just get up and Leave the classroom. You have to ask for permission. There's a hall pass that's in, and you probably get a limited amount of how many times you can go to the bathroom. And then also a teacher can also say, not right now. So can you imagine having to go to the bathroom and then that your body kicks in, intuition says, knock, knock, knock. Hey, you have to go to the bathroom. And so then you express the need to go to the bathroom and then someone denies that need. And so as this happens over time, we then start to shut down our connection to our intuition and we start to then hold it, which goes against our body's nature and wisdom, right? So we are now just now in a place, I feel like, in schools. I mean, we were in school how long ago?
For me,
it was not that long ago. It's just a brief moment.
The 80s, but yes.
just not too long ago at all, right? So think about when we were in school and that's how going to the bathroom was. Now, and I don't know how it is in most schools, but like in the school that I was in, they definitely have bathroom breaks where the teacher encourages the students to go at this time, like after lunch, in between recess, before nap time, these types of things, right? But children can, and in Montessori, I do believe there is more room for autonomy than there is maybe in a non-Montessori environment, right? Which is why we chose Montessori because we want to retain her autonomy. And so kids can now get up and go to the bathroom as needed, adhering to that intuition and keeping that connection to the body intact. So think about that with food, though. The body says,
I'm hungry.
You're hungry. You need more food. And then the child expresses, I'm hungry. I need more food. And then they're told, not now. We can't eat now. We eat an hour later, or 2 hours later. They come into school, you know, around 8, they have breakfast. Most classrooms, their snack depends on when they go to lunch. So it's probably somewhere between 9:30 and 10:30. And then lunch is also like the fucking Wild West.
Yeah.
We expect kids to eat in like seriously like 17 to 20 minutes. And
feed them shit too.
Yes. And we slowly condition them to over time ignore cues to eat. And so as an adult, I'm sure you can already imagine, and I'm sure I hope that people listening are starting to draw the connection between where you disconnected from your body and its cues on when to eat and when to stop eating and developed issues with food. Hello, it started in schools.
Yeah.
It started in schools when we say you can eat only at this time for this amount of time. The eating has to stop at this time. It cannot resume again until this time, despite what your needs are as a body. So the way my work looked in the school, it was two-faced, in one that I had a space in which teachers could bring to me children, students who were in a state of dysregulation, and we would use tools in the room to regulate them. And then I would return them back to the classroom. Right. Another face of the work is kids are dysregulated in the classroom and I have to go to the space. So I'm making like, it's like call work.
Right.
Teachers would text me, please come now. So-and-so is losing it. Right. And I cannot even tell you, I mean, you know, we used to feed those kids. We used to buy crazy amount of snacks that I would keep in my room all the time, because 7 out of 10 times I respond to a kid, they were just hungry.
Yeah.
And I would, and a lot of times there would be snack or food in the room that they were requesting and being denied.
Yeah. Denied water too.
Yes.
Water too. Not just food. It's water.
Yes. Yeah, we get a water break at so-and-so time.
Right.
And I remember, you know, going, butting up against teachers a lot, being like, do you have a snack? And they were like, well, yes, but we go to lunch at this time. And then if I give them a snack, I have to give everyone a snack. And in my head, I'm thinking, you are denying basic human rights in this moment. The system is designed to deny children
food
and water.
When they need it.
When they need it.
Yeah.
That is a basic human right. And I have a fucking problem with that.
I know you should. And like I said, it's one of those things that you've just been told so many times, that's just the way it is. And you're just like, that's just the way it is. Yeah. Until somebody comes along and says, no, well, the way it is fucked up and we can't do that. And then the other layer of it, I think, is you mentioned, you know, we found out this past school year that Sela is on the autism spectrum, and how many kids are going undiagnosed and have these same issues as our daughter does, but don't have the support that they need. That goes to some parents who were too prideful sometimes to have their kids assessed and evaluated. And it's mind blowing.
It is.
And then you're denying a kid that's possibly
that's more vulnerable. Yes.
Food, water, bathroom. And then it just takes on a whole other, it's a whole other level.
Yeah. So kids who are neurodivergent in general dysregulate more frequently than kids who are neurotypical. And the degree to which they dysregulate is what I would say would be a bigger dysregulation. I mean, like, I don't want to try to quantify, you know, dysregulation, but
it's a big meltdown and it can last.
It can last longer and it can be harder to
bring them back
to a state of regulation. Whereas a kid who is neurotypical maybe will have more resilience and maybe have more tools, can co-regulate on their own a little bit more than a neurodivergent person or child. So, and I'm in the school and I'm...
And credit to you too, because in Sela's case, you've said that you thought that this was the case for a long time.
Yes.
And, you know, I didn't think it was. I thought, I don't know. I don't know what I thought. I just, now I looking back at it now, I'm like, all right. And for me, just looking back at just like when she is upset and in the space of dysregulation and can't get her back.
It's way more intense. It's neurotypical.
And it can last for just a longer amount of time before she can come back.
Right. Yeah. And this is its own podcast probably.
Yeah. But, no, it definitely is.
Yeah. I've always known that Sela was
neurodivergent. You did.
Neurodivergent. And I didn't know like really what that meant. I was just really fighting to support her.
Yeah.
Because no one believed me.
Yeah.
I mean, we had taken her to the doctor. We had asked, I mean, her pediatrician's fantastic. And I asked her almost every time we have a checkup.
You did.
Do we think that she might be on the spectrum? And it was always, you know, let's wait and see. And that is the case a lot of times for girls who are social, who make eye contact, which Sela does.
Yeah.
And so it was really hard to get her diagnosed. And we had to do it outside of the system. We had to go the private route in order to get her a diagnosis. So I think I'm in the school and I'm facing this situation as a parent of a child who's in the school.
Right.
And we had lots of meetings around getting Sela's needs met. Yes. And then also as an employee, advocating for all of these other kids who you're talking about, who I become the space in between. So in public schools, there are lots of services for kids who are diagnosed and going through the services to get like an IEP, an individualized education plan, and that have services to support them, whether it be PT or OT or speech therapy or written in breaks, and all of the things can happen and can be supported, but they they need a diagnosis to do that first. Yes. And a lot of parents are resistant to the diagnosis space. And so the kids who get services, they are supported by EE, exceptional education, right? So they're supported by EE. So then you have the kids who are not diagnosed, who are dysregulating mm-hmm. at a disproportionate rate to the kids who are, you know, neurotypical. And I was the catch for that space. I was the net for that space. And so I'm seeing kids and I'm like, these are undiagnosed kids. And they are not at the space in which they can receive services yet, but they need services.
And I would say
they need support.
I would say even worse than being in a space where they need support is a lot of times they're also being shut down, right? They're being told like Stella was on the first day, like, oh, you still crying? Or and I think what it comes down to is we live in a society and a culture that we don't listen to kids and we weren't listened to when we were kids. No. And then we become adults who are also who repeat the same shit that the adults
because when we adults, were kids. A lot of adults moving through this world right now, you think you're fine. Let me tell you, you're not.
And she's right.
You're fucking not. You're suppressing a whole lot of emotions that need to come up and come out so you can really experience life.
you're right, because I was one of the adults and I can say that. And I think that the idea of listening to a kid and then taking what they say seriously, not just passing it off like, oh, they just want this or they just want that. They just want to do this. It was just always what we tell kids. It's like, oh, no, he don't need that. He just needs this. He just needs constantly. And that shit has to stop because it carries over. So then you have kids that are possibly undiagnosed, are also being told in their own household the same shit that they're being told in school, that there's nothing wrong with them. There's
not that it's wrong.
Not right. I didn't mean it to come out like that.
It's okay. But it's okay. It's good that we like say this and then do the repair around it, because it's not that something's wrong with them, but they are experiencing the world in a unique, in a different way that needs support.
Yes.
And so we're not saying that, oh, nothing's wrong with you, but we're saying you don't need support. You don't need anything.
What you're saying when you're telling me your needs, that's not really what your needs are.
Right. I'm here to tell you what your needs are.
Right.
Which then grows a generation of people who don't know what they want, mm-hmm. who can't make decisions by themselves. They give their power away. They give it to someone else in making decisions. And I know that you either are one of these people or you know one of these people who can't make a decision for self, and they give that power over to someone else, whether they be a parent or they be a pastor, or whether they let the government decide, or someone else always knows better. Like, should I do this or should I do that? Right. And that's because you were disconnected as a child from knowing what's best. You were stripped of that right. It's not your fault. You were stripped of that right. It's society.
Right. It's the way we are.
Yes. You were stripped of that right. You were shamed for even having a need. I mean, how many times have we told that Stella is manipulative?
Oh my God. Oh, she's just trying. She just doesn't want to go. That's why she's upset. She just doesn't want to do this. That's why she's upset. She just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, she's demanding. She's manipulative. I can't even tell you how many times James and I have been told that this school year. And I'm like, first of all, kids are
told that before this school year.
Yeah, before the school year. Yeah. But kids are come into this world manipulative. Hello. It's like their job to get you to meet their needs. That is quite literally what they're doing until they learn how to meet the need themselves through watching you and or learning. Hello, this is the work you signed up for as a parent. But again, another podcast. But so it's not your fault as an adult. Because as a kid, you were told your needs are not real. Then you were shamed for having them. And then you were told to trust someone else over you. You're not scared. Just go. You're not scared. Do this. You're not hungry. Go outside and play. Mm-hmm. Or you're not hurt. Don't cry.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, like negating the way people feel, like turn after turn after turn. And so then we grow up to be adults. And when someone hurts our feelings, we say, that's okay. My feelings aren't hurt. And then we suppress that disappointment and that betrayal or whatever that hurt looks like. Right.
So that's
the system overall. It's like the system that it's the societal system that supports this shitty school system that is upheld by our conditioning, and it needs to change.
It needs to be broken down.
It needs and to just be rebuilt. Yes.
And that is completely.
Literally.
I don't want to go into too many of the specific things that went on during the school year that you really had? Okay.
Because I feel like parents don't know the deal. And let me tell you,
parents don't know the deal.
We would not know the deal had I not worked in that school.
We would not. It's I always compare it to, they always tell you, don't look how sausage is made.
Yep.
Kenya saw how the sausage was made. And
I was disgusted.
We are vegan now, both literally and metaphorically for this instance. But yes.
Yeah. So before I share some of the things that I saw and heard and experienced in the school system this year, I do think it's important to say that there are so many teachers out there who are just gems.
Yes. Agreed.
And we survived
because of
the gems.
Yes.
We survived.
We made it.
We made a whole year.
Our daughter is better because of it. Like she's in a better place now because of the gems that were in that school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There are just so many people in the school system who are amazing. And so we're not by any means saying throw out everything, but the system itself needs to be completely bulldozed down to be built back up. And I would argue that the gems agree.
Yeah.
That the gems within the system who really are there and doing the work and working to stay connected to themselves so that they can stay connected to the kids. And I would say that these people also would probably agree that the system is not meeting our kids' needs, not meeting our teachers' needs, not meeting the needs of the community. Because I mean, then we can also talk about like what reading levels are at across the state,
of course,
and the country, and et cetera, et cetera. But during this school year, I will say that since there is a staff shortage, I mean, I just was able to see an organism in crisis.
And I think with the staff shortage, that's different than anything you or I probably witnessed when we were kids.
Yeah.
Because now, instead of having a substitute teacher, which we used to have, who would just play a video or something like that, they now have to separate kids. So like 15 kids from this class will go to another class and 15 will go to another class. Yep. And then that class of 30 becomes a class of 45 out of nowhere.
Yes. So splitting of the classes will take place in the morning if teachers are not out. Yes. So what happens is you drop your kid off at school and you think they're in Mrs. Smith's class having the most beautiful day. And what you don't know is Miss Smith is not there. And your kid is now in Mr. Howard's classroom with 30
other kids.
And you have no idea about it unless your kid tells you on the way home. And that is intentional, because if parents knew the way kids are being shuffled around and split up and taken out of routines and taken out of environments that they know and around people, teachers, aides, etc., that they know, and being shifted to spaces that they don't know, routines that are not their own, with people that they don't know, maybe are meeting for the first time. I'm sure they've, you know, maybe seen them in the cafeteria or the library or the gym or something, but they don't know them.
Right.
Because if parents knew that, there would be accountability.
Agreed.
So it is intentionally so that you don't know that, because a call out, and for those of you don't have kids in the school, a call out is when admin does like a mass call and a call goes to all the parents, and a call out could be made, or a teacher could send a message to the class, to the class parents, and saying, I'm out today and Mr. So-and-so will be the sub, etc. But it's not that. It's six kids going here and five kids going there. And before you know it, I mean, there would be days where the third graders, we had two third grade classrooms, I think each about 20 some kids, and they'd all be with one teacher in one room. Mm. I mean, we were not that far past COVID.
Right.
So it's like all of these kids in this small room with one teacher. And sometimes the teachers, both third grade teachers, would be out and they'd be in a room with a paraprofessional or a teacher's aide, not learning.
Yeah, of course.
Not doing shit.
I feel like when we had subs when I was a kid, we didn't do shit.
No, we did not do shit. You're right.
I do think your experience.
But we weren't 40 kids to a classroom either.
We weren't.
And we were doing, we might have watched a movie, but there were worksheets taking place, and
there were,
or, you know, something. I mean, something, but it was not as frequent. Mm-mm. It was a lot.
It was very short staff.
I mean, I have seen kids closed in offices because they were crying, and I'm talking about pre-K kids. Mm-hmm. I have heard crying from the hallway and gone into classrooms to see how I could be of support, and found kids closed in offices. Granted, the office has windows, so there can be seen, but the message being sent is you can cry alone in there by yourself where you're not a disturbance to the rest of the space with no support, just the expectation that eventually, I guess, they cried out.
That's what the expectation is.
So I've seen kids isolated for dysregulation. Mm. I've walked into a teacher, a pre-K teacher, asleep during nap time. So there was a group of pre-K kids who he was in charge of and he was asleep. So most of the kids were asleep and some kids were up and our kid was screaming, crying on her mat by herself. And
that could have been anybody's kid.
Could have been anybody's kid. And I'm grateful it was mine and I was able to be there and support her.
And that's my point, is that like she's sitting there, something could have been actually wrong.
Really could have been wrong with her.
Yeah.
And imagine that's your kid crying alone in a room because the teacher is asleep. And then to know that the repercussions for that, he taught for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So these are just some of the things, and these are the big things. I mean, the daily things are the way people are talking to kids.
I was going to bring that up. I was going to we just shit talk kids in any way and there's no repercussions there at all.
Yeah.
No repair, no repercussions, nothing.
No repercussions.
You can talk to kids and nobody wants to be talked to that way, whether you're a kid, an adult, if you're an adult and somebody talks to you the way some people talk to kids in the school system, you're going to be like, you can't talk to me
It becomes problematic.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's why adults wouldn't do it, because it becomes problematic.
Right.
But there is no inherent respect given to kids. They're not respected because they're humans and born with the right to be respected and valued. Respect is earned as you get older and it comes with age, and I will respect you as you do this, or
there's
conditional.
Strings attached.
Yes, yeah. It's conditional. Respect. Absolutely. As a human being is conditional.
Yes. It should not be conditional
and is treated as such. And seeing a group of kids walk down a hallway in a public school really is likened to a prison. They are single file line. Mm-hmm. They are hands behind their back. They are eyes to the back of the head of the person in front of them. And there's no talking. There's, I know this sounds dramatic, but there's no humanity.
Yeah. No, I agree. I remember the first time I saw that with their hands behind their back, I was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
This can't.
When we picked Stella up from drama camp last week, she said to me, I love walking in the halls here because we get to pretend to be an animal and it's so fun and we don't have to walk with our hands behind our backs and be quiet. And I thought, that's so fucked up.
Yeah.
She's five.
And by the way, we took her to NCT, Nashville Children's Theater, and there's not enough good. We could do a whole podcast on singing their praises. I feel like,
because they get it.
They got everything from A to Z, and it was literally perfect.
They get it. So it's like when I was saying in the beginning, it's like not necessarily outdated, but like not intuitive. So it's intuitively, we don't talk to people in a certain way.
Right.
Because we wouldn't want to be talked to in that way. Intuitively, we would feed other people because we would want to be fed. Intuitively, we would support other people in times of distress. We wouldn't isolate them because we ourselves would want to be supported. That's why I was like, it's not so much that the school system is outdated. It's that it lacks humanity.
It lacks all humanity.
And it lacks intuition and compassion. And it's designed to be that way.
And we never ask why, right? Like,
I think the why is like, it's the compliance piece. We need them to be compliant because schools were not developed to create educated thinkers. Schools were developed to create workers, a working class. Non-thinking for themselves working class. Right.
I was talking about the why as to like if a kid is quote unquote acting out. Right.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, hey, like what's wrong? They're just told, don't do that. Or you're going to get detention or ISS or out of school or whatever.
I have heard a teacher tell a five-year-old that he is going to go to jail acting like that. Who says these things to five-year-olds? I mean, I just feel like the things that I saw in 1 year, and it wasn't even a full year because I started in October.
Yeah.
So it was less than a year, could last me a lifetime to be wary of putting my child
back in school, back in the system. So instead, you have taken things in your own hands. I'll say in our own hands, but you're heading this up. So in your hands, instead, you have decided we are pulling Stella from school.
We are.
and kind of starting our own school this year. This is a homeschool pod that could blossom into a school one day.
Yeah, I hope it does. I hope it takes roots, and I hope that other parents who are in alignment with our same values and mission and ideas on how they want to live in a world and how the world that they want their kids to live in and grow up in follow suit. So yeah. I do hope that, yes, this year it's a sweet little pod.
It's a sweet little
homeschool pod where we hire a teacher, we rent out a space, and the pod or school is born and dictated by the community that governs it, the parents, the family, the community.
The kids.
It's the kids and their family. We're the ones who are shaping and molding the environment. And so for us, it looks like it's part-time because I'm also here to tell you that
the school day is too long.
Yeah. I can tell you every day. What did I used to tell you?
I remember even when you were having good days, I would check in on you. It'd be like 12 or 1. You'd be like, no, this has been the greatest day. The kids have been great. Everything is great. And then like you would come home and be like, from 1:30 to the rest of the day, it was a shit show.
Let me tell you, at 1:30, I would be like, I have to go from wherever I am. I have to go back to my room because the elementary kids cannot hang. Once they hit 1:30, this is when fights began to break out. This is when kids would start to melt down. And we're talking like third, fourth, fifth graders would start to melt down and they would come to my room crying over things that they would have been able to manage earlier in the day. You know, kids, and this is what I always was. She was mugging me. She was looking at me. She was looking at me some kind of way. I'm telling you, kids can manage mugging and looking at you some kind of way at 10:30 and they cannot manage it at 1:30 because they are tapped. They have been stretched to capacity with stimulation and they are no longer able to regulate for themselves. So the day is done at 1:30. Kids are not learning anymore after that time. They are in survival mode until they get out. And quite frankly, all the adults in the building are too. If you are in any school, you know any teacher, I guarantee you your teacher friends or the people in your school that you are working at, you all are walking past each other at 1:30 and you're going, almost there. Almost 3.
It's best case scenario.
Almost Thursday. Almost Friday. Yeah. We made it. These are the things that are being said as you pass other adults because at 1:30, you're done too. Yeah. As an adult. So our little homeschool pod is part-time. It's a 9-to-2 concept.
4-ish days a week. 3 days, was it 3 days mandatory?
Four days optional. Uh-huh. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 9-to-2 with Fridays being optional and Fridays are enrichment days. So those would be days that we would do field trips or they would be days when we bring someone in to do what would be considered like extracurricular in a mainstream or, you know, school system. And it goes all year round with larger breaks built in, because let me tell you, regulation, whether it be throughout the day, throughout the week, throughout the year, is about breaks, is about rest, is about pouring into the regulation system, into the nervous system. And so the more you can be proactive, the less you have to be reactive.
Right.
And so our school year is year round and it looks like every 6 weeks there is a week break. So we've basically taken like what the public school system crams into, I think 10 weeks of breaks throughout the year, and then large summer break, you know, that included in that time. We've spaced out the 10 weeks throughout the school year. So it looks like starting in September, kids, we go for 6 weeks, then we take a week break off.
Right.
And that also encourages families to travel and to explore, because if you're in the current public school system, if your kid is out 5 days outside of that, like they're sick, I mean, they become truant and then you have to answer to the courts. And so where is the time for your family to continue to explore and expand together? It all has to happen in the summer, which it costs $1 million to do.
No, like, and it's funny because even if you look at flight prices on school breaks, they're like double.
Yeah.
Those off weeks.
Yeah. We'll be able to travel in those off weeks for a reasonable rate.
Yes.
And we'll also be able to rest. We could travel for half of the week and rest for the other half. Yes. We can explore more of our regional area. There's lots of potential with those breaks. So yeah, we go 6 weeks and then we break for a week, and that happens throughout the year. And then there's the one full month of
August.
Yep. Yes. So we would still go through July.
Right.
And this also helps kids, because let me tell you, your teachers and your admin and your staff in your school, what we go through after we have a beautiful break that all the adults in the building need. For example, we got 3 weeks for Christmas this year. Let me tell you, the adults, what we go through that first week back when kids are being reintroduced to the environment. Right. It is a shit show, and everyone needs to cash app their teacher, their admin, millions of dollars for surviving that period of time, because kids get out of their routine and there's just a lot of
readjustment.
There's a lot of readjustment. I want to say there's a lot of vata in the air, which is like the energy of movement, which people can't ground. They can't manage. And so they just basically go completely dysregulated. But there's a lot of readjustment that needs to take place. And it's very stressful for all parties involved, especially your kids. And so the more we can keep them in a routine, the better. Kids thrive in routine.
Yes.
Kids thrive in knowing, you know what? People.
Yes.
Thrive in routine.
I thrive in routine. You know me.
People thrive with knowledge.
Yeah.
People thrive in knowing what's coming next and knowing what to expect. People get very dysregulated when the unknown enters their psyche, their awareness, their world. And so when kids who don't really have a concept of time don't understand, when are they going back to school?
Right.
When is this break over? You know, and that's another thing we struggled with in school too. The routine always changing because staff was short and also teachers were dysregulated.
And so that's tough for somebody like neurodivergent, like Sella, but imagine a kid is undiagnosed.
Yeah.
And Sella gets the support and she had her mom there.
Yeah.
If your kid is neurodivergent and not diagnosed, it's a shit show.
Yeah.
And they're not getting the support that
sometimes
they need.
Sometimes they're doing this at this time. Sometimes nap is taking place in this room.
Right.
Sometimes it's taking place in this room. Sometimes it starts at this time. Sometimes it starts at this time.
Right.
I remember we had a meeting in which we were basically fighting for Sella to have snacks when she needed to eat, and also that she could nap in the same room at the same time
and in the same
nap space. And I remember them being like, wow, yeah, I could see how that could be beneficial for her. And in my mind, I'm thinking,
they never even thought about it.
You mean, wow.
They never thought about it. That's what I'm saying, though.
Yes.
Like, I had never thought about it. You know what I mean? It's just like so many details that we are just taught. It's just the way. And when things are just the way, we go on and we don't think about them. And then that's how this becomes a system.
Yeah.
That's why we're here.
It's time to change the system. It's actually time to burn this shit to the ground.
Yeah.
A lot of systems that are in place right now need to be burnt to the ground in order for true change, true equity to take place.
Agreed.
We can keep putting beautiful people who are change agents in these spaces, but if they're not supported by the system, which they're not going to be, the system itself won't change. So it's like shout out and kudos to all of the gems who work in these spaces and who want to be. I mean, that's why I took it. I was like, no, I want to be the change that I want to see.
Right.
Like, this principle's calling me to action.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not going to shrink at this call. I'm going to answer it. And then I got in thinking I could really change some shit, not for the whole system, but maybe for this small space.
For this one school. Yeah,
for this one place. And then I got in there and was like, oh, it's not supposed to be changed. It's not meant to be changed.
No.
This is how it is.
No.
And this is how they want it to be.
Yes.
Despite all of the lip service that one would get, the daily ins and outs is that this is how it's meant to be.
Right.
The school system is thriving and the people in it are surviving.
And so what you did was say, instead of changing the system from the inside,
we're going to create my own system.
And so I wanted you to talk a little bit about the values of the school that you're starting. What are they? You have a whole PowerPoint presentation.
I do have a PowerPoint presentation. The values is that we will, even if we grow, we will always be small. The benefit would be that it's a smaller teacher to children ratio.
Your 10 kids is what you're, what we're shooting for this year.
10 is what we're shooting for. So 10 kids to one guide, with the intention that this helps the guide really meet the student where they are. We will be family governed. I think back to the situation in which the teacher was asleep and I said to the principal, I want to live in a world where if I walk into a classroom and the teacher is asleep, I have the authority and the power to be like, you no longer work here.
Right.
Because this is my child.
Yeah. As a parent, you want to have that authority.
As a parent, yeah. I want to have that authority. Agreed. Because this is my child.
Yeah.
I am handing them over to you from these hours and I expect their safety. And if it's not being delivered upon, I don't want to wait for an outside source to validate whether or not, you know, this is the person who my kid should be taught by. I want power in that. It is my child and I'm given power in every aspect of her life, except for this one.
And then you drop them off somewhere and you have no knowledge and no power.
Yeah, no knowledge, no power. Yeah. And so the value is that we will always stay family, governed, led, whatever that mm-hmm. is, right? Whatever that word
and
is.
Child first.
And child first.
Child led.
Child led. So this in our school, our pod, it's not a school yet, but our pod, our school, the system we are creating.
Right.
Children are not only seen and heard, but they are valued. Like that's intentional. We're listening to them. We're acting upon their requests.
Right.
We are embedding in them that we hear your voice, use your voice. We support your voice. We hear your needs. We'd like to help you meet them, show you how to meet them yourself.
Yeah.
Classrooms are multi-age. We pulled a lot of values from Montessori because I just think Montessori is such a beautiful concept and a beautiful way. So it's the curriculum is Montessori play-based, project-based. And so it's the concept that children are leading and guiding what they're interested in. And it's up to the guide to then create the lesson based off those interests, really. This is hands-on work.
Right.
It's not sitting at a desk. And so being able to choose the curriculum, because a lot of teachers have curriculum handed to them in so many.
I would say most.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to say, yeah. I don't know. So I don't want to say, but right. It does seem like most teachers are handed their curriculum. It seems like most teachers get into the work because they have such great ideas and how they want to
educate,
change the world and teach kids. And then they never get to use those beautiful, brilliant minds and they become bogged down and like
shut down. If you're a creative person and you're told not to be creative,
yeah.
after a while, you're going to lose your creativity because mm-hmm. you're not practicing it every day.
Right. Yeah.
You're not honing your craft. You're going to lack inspiration.
And so the teacher will be able to create their own curriculum and then 3 outside breaks a day. So kids right now get 1 outside break a day. And I don't think it's any more than 30 minutes. And to a teacher, a lot of teachers credit, a lot of them are getting them outside more on beautiful days. And then there are some teachers who take away recess as a means of control.
Punishment.
Yeah. Punishment. Yeah. So three outside breaks because nature is necessary. Movement is necessary for regulation, for expansion, for retention of information.
I think the main thing is just kids that are seen and heard.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't happen in public, private, charter, whatever it is, most schools function the way the school you were at this year functions. It's trying to get, like I said, square pegs into round holes. Yeah. So, I mean, that's what it is. And that's not what the school you're creating is.
It's not. Yeah. We're hoping to encourage all types of pegs.
Yeah.
To live
a diverse
group of pegs to live out their lives in whatever way they see fit. The value of sovereignty is
there's your name.
Yeah. The value of sovereignty is important in which kids have autonomy in their life.
If your kid needs a snack,
they get to have a snack.
If kid needs a water,
get to have water.
Yeah.
If your kid doesn't like math, but they like cars, they don't have to do just the worksheet on math. The guide can meet them at cars. And we have 2 red cars over here and we have 3 red cars over here. How many cars do we have? Yeah. And now the kid's not doing math in their mind. The kid's playing with cars.
Right.
And so when we have space for teachers and guides to lead in that type of way, mm-hmm. I just feel like the options for expansion are endless.
So quick question. Say you're not Sella's mom, you're the person over this school. And I, as Sella's father, walk in with my daughter.
Okay.
And you think, oh, what a handsome man Sella's father is.
That would be my first thought.
I'm sure it would be.
There's probably rules against that. Yeah, so too bad.
It's fine. we can make exceptions. No, and my child is visibly upset.
Yes.
Is it okay for me to stay there for a few minutes with her
yes.
until she gets acclimated?
Yes. So this is another, aspect or value, I guess you could say, of the school, in which we are wanting parents to be involved. And so like Friday, I was saying, would be like an enrichment day. We want parents who have specialties to come in and share with the kids. So like I could come in and do yoga. Someone could come in and teach soccer. Someone could come in and teach cooking, or someone could come in and do whatever it is that they love, because kids don't care. They love it because you love it. Yeah, right.
Right.
And then also parents are welcome in the space to support the guide, especially with their child. It's like, hey, my child's having a really rough day today. Can I be here in the beginning and like ease them in? Yeah. If that's what's like going to regulate your child and send them on a successful day. Yeah. We support that. We support you supporting your child. When we were at NCT, the Nashville Children's Theater, we had that experience with them. We took Stella to day camp, and bearing in mind that this has been a year in work progress. Right. So like we took Stella last summer and she could not separate. She couldn't stay the whole day. And they were like, that's okay. They let us come in, tour the facility, see the classroom. Meet her teacher, do a little bit of the activity that they were going to do in the classroom. And then watch all the kids go in, and she still decided she like could not do it. And we were like, that's okay. And so this isn't one of those other moments that I was talking about. It's like, it's where a parent could say, you're okay. Trust me. You're safe here. I am not like that.
Right.
I want Stella to go in on her own trust, that she trusts she is safe there. Right. Because if not, she's going to look to me to tell her whole life whether she can trust something.
Right.
And so I want her to walk in on her own trust. And yeah, that causes some problems sometimes because she's coming home with us a lot instead of going to the program that we have signed her up for. Yeah. And so she came home with us that day, and we tried throughout the year. We did we signed her up for some weekend camps and some weekend workshops, and which we would go and expose her to the staff in the building and et cetera. And like you said, this year with some amazing gems in our school building, we got her to a place where we got to day camp this year, and little hesitation, but went right in.
Right in with the familiar person that we had introduced her to.
Her safety person. Yep. And this is like another thing that, you know, I really like, am grateful NCT supporting, is in which I felt like constantly like a lunatic. But if you have a child who is neurodivergent, creating a sensory plan for them is something that's done in the community, and it's wise. Creating like a safety plan for them is something that's done in the community, and it's wise. And we're not saying safe as in she wasn't safe in the school or people in the school weren't safe, but safe in the neurodivergent community means comfortable and known. So there are safe foods, there are safe clothes, you know what I mean? So a safety plan, a plan in which she is comfortable in, thus feels safe in.
Right.
And they were basically like, we support your safety plan. Everything.
And you know what else they never did? They were never like, just leave her, she'll be fine.
No.
They never once said that. They were always like, all right, it's going to be fun, but okay, it's all right.
Yep. And if you decide to come back later, we'll see you again then. They were never like, just leave her.
And then the Friday of drama camp, the
schedule changed.
The schedule was a little different, and
the director reached out and was like, hey, the schedule's different. It's going to be a little bit of a different situation today. This is our plan for Stella. We want to check with you to make sure that you feel like this is a good plan for her.
Amazing.
And I literally cried because I had been gaslit all year. At every turn, someone's like, you're her mama. You know what's best.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, this is what's best. She needs to have a snack at 1:30. This is what's best. Right. If she could stay with her safe person when she first enters the room, this is what's best. If she could nap in the same place at the same time in the same spot.
Right.
I'm saying,
you get pushback on all that shit.
And everything I get pushback. Well, it's kind of hard to say. Well, it makes it kind of hard to do a snack. Well, this, and this. Just fucking gaslight the whole year. And then here is this program calling me because the system has changed. Whereas in school, classes would be split and I would hear about it and then go to the room or reach out to her para and be like, what's the plan for Stella?
Right.
Because never once was I notified that the plan was changing for my child during that day.
Yeah.
So here's this small program going, hey, our plan has changed for the day because on the last day of campus is a little bit different. And so we wanted to reach out for you because the teacher and I talked and we created this plan for Sela. And we want to know if you think this is going to be a good plan for her. And I was just like, so I have not been crazy all year.
You have not. There is a place.
There are spaces that get it.
Yeah.
That get it. And now if Nashville Children's Theater, you're listening, you could just create a school. Well, that would be amazing. Wow, that would be amazing.
Take a lot off your plate.
But yes, to hear it validated and see it working out in the wild was just like validation to me that everything that I want for our child and all children, neurotypical, neurodivergent, all kids need this type of environment in which they are truly seen, truly heard, truly supported to be individuals, truly set up for success to thrive and not in a hustle culture.
Right. Like truly be happy.
But truly be happy.
Truly be happy. That's what we want.
As adults, there's like this reclamation of the soft life happening, right? I'm going to live my best soft life. And the reason you have to reclaim that soft life is because it was stripped away from you as a child. Yeah. I want to preserve
her soft life.
Her soft life. I don't want her to have to reclaim it in her 30s and her 40s. I want her to have it. I want all of these kids to have the soft life. I want them to know that softness exists. It's not just like, how many times do we hear the world is, it's a tough world. It's a hard world. You got to get Sela ready for them. It's a rough world out there. She's not in an army.
She's five.
She's five.
Yeah.
She is five.
She like, has time. We have time.
We have time. She goes to war.
Yeah, she's five.
So like I want to instill softness in these children. The soft is already there. I want to instill in them the value to keep it and to preserve it. And to seek out soft spaces and to seek out soft love and soft people, like who don't talk to you in harsh tones. And I want that for all children. All children deserve that.
I love you. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that like of all the people I could have created life with, it was you.
Thank you. I almost made it through without crying.
I know.
Super close. So yeah.
Alez, you got a kid in the Nashville area.
And you're interested in our school ideas or you feel like an alignment.
Yes.
Hit us up.
I love you. Thank you for doing this.
Love you.